Due to bad weather and a problem with the pier, more than half of the scheduled ferries to Clare Island have been cancelled since the start of this year. The problem is with the mainland pier at Runa. The islanders are struggling, and after a number of attempts, Joanne McNicholas got to Clare Island in the last few days. She sent this report.
I'm on Runa Pier, west of Lewisburg on the County Mayo mainland, and I'm waiting for O'Grady's ferry service to take me to Clare Island. I've had to wait for almost a week to meet the ferry here because with the weekly storms and the poor and dangerous conditions of the pier, the ferry is unable to dock, and this is causing huge disruption to the lives of the people living on Clare Island and Inishturk.
Since January this year now, we've had a lot of missed sailings, days we can't land on Runa because of swells and wind, and the pier there isn't suitable anymore for the conditions that's in it.
Alan O'Grady of Clare Island Ferries is skipper of the Clew Bay Queen.
It could be down to climate change. It's becoming more regular. Say maybe 3-4 years ago we had the same thing. We were blocked off probably from landing in Runa maybe for about 3 months straight.
It must be very disruptive for your lives.
It is, you know, it's very tough. What it's going to do is it's going to depopulate Clare Island. People are going to start leaving the islands unless we can get a bit of help. We've been trying to get help from ministers, but there's closed doors everywhere we go so far. We need a good safe pier on our mainland. What we do at the moment, we go down to Achill Island, but it's a commercial pier and it's not suitable really. There's not much space there, you know. It means we need either a bit of work done to Runa, put a shelter outside it, or there's another site just east of Runa Pier that we were hoping maybe they'd build another pier for us, or if we could get funding for it. Clare Island needs a pier.
Have you actually made applications?
We have, but it seems to be closed doors everywhere we go. We've asked ministers and we've asked for help and we've asked our local councils, but it's just closed doors. There doesn't seem to be any monies available.
And this is a pretty big boat.
She's up on 70 foot. She's a landing craft. And she's a great vessel for Clare Island because we cover cargo, passengers, and we can carry boat together, which is a bonus. And she's very stable, you know, manoeuvrable. So she's perfect. She suits all. But anything smaller, really, for the conditions and the seas that's out here, like we're brought open to the Atlantic, anything smaller wouldn't be sufficient. Inishturk is our next sailing. When we go back out to Runa, we have the weekly supplies. We do two trips to Inishturk. We have coal and animal feed, and same for Clare Island, and shop supplies just to keep people ticking over. We haven't been able to land in Runa for about 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks maybe. So we're just getting rid of the backlog that has been there waiting for people, waiting for their coal and animal feed and shop supplies, so on and so forth. Runa, you can't go near it if there's any more than 2 meter swell, you know, 1.5-2 meter swell. Your infrastructure is very important, you know, it's very important.
And do you find that the tides are rising?
My father talks a lot about it. On a high tide now, they'd always have a marking on a pier where they'd have seen the peak tide on a bad day. But it's climbing up those piers now, it's going up over those piers. It seems to be getting worse all the time.
I'm Padraig O'Malley, I'm the postmaster here on the island, and I also run the local shop. As you can appreciate, everything comes by ferry, and that's all well and good when the ferry schedule is running perfectly. But in winter time, and like over the last 2 months particularly, when the ferry service has been interrupted almost daily, you know, every day there has been problems with weather and also with the pier at Runa, which is in a bad state, and the ferry cannot land there lots of days because of swell. And that needs to be addressed, because my delivery people, when they come on their day to deliver, and if there's no ferry, well then what do you do? So I'm trying to liaise with the ferry operators and with the delivery people all the time to try and get supplies, and it's not easy. You're talking about fresh veg, frozen foods, milk, bread, etc. I get something each day, the same way with the mail. The mail comes 4 days a week. That's disrupted, or it mightn't come in the morning as it normally would. It might come a bit later. So it's an ongoing problem. Like, I mean, you're constantly liaising with the delivery people and the ferry services to try and get the stuff to the island. What tends to happen now when the boats cannot go into Rona Pier, they operate from Achill, maybe once a day or whatever. But that's a very difficult journey because it's the other side of the bay and you have to get the supplies transported all around, and it's not always possible to do that. It's quite awkward, and you're dependent on the goodwill also of the ferry operator to bring the stuff, because it's not ideal conditions for loading there either. So really, what we want really is improved facilities both here on Clare Island and at Rona Pier, you know, to make the connectivity better. The island is very much a commuting island now, and if people cannot get to and from and get their goods to and from, it makes life quite difficult on the island. And you know, in this day and age, people just won't put up with it. And the future of the islands are at stake here, really. We have a falling population. We have less children in the primary school. And once populations go to a certain level, then they won't be able to sustain services. And that's the big worry. And it's all very well and good to, you know, to have lots of people coming in summertime. But, I mean, really and truly, it's the 12-month population that you need to protect. And unless something is done very, very quickly and soon, I think that is in danger. It's down to the infrastructure. We need better piers, better ferry services, development at Rona Pier. We need good broadband services. Telecommunications is everything. I mean, good broadband would mean that people could work from home here. A regular ferry service that you could depend on would help develop maybe some kind of industry, or maybe even prolong the tourist season. Anything that would enable people to come and live here or to stay here.
What's the population at the moment here?
Right now, at the moment here in February, I would say that we are, there isn't much more, I'd say, on a Monday night on the island, more than 100 people live here at the moment, if it's that at all on some occasions, when all the secondary school and third level and people are gone. The secondary school children board on the mainland, mostly in Lewisburg. They stay with families over there. They go on Monday morning, weather permitting, and return on Friday evening. We're in a particular problem because of the pier we deal with at Rona Pier. I mentioned earlier that we go to Achill, but that's also a logistical nightmare because people's cars are then at the other side of the bay. So that's an ongoing problem, and unless that's addressed soon, I would be very, very worried for the future of the place.
Swedish native Anna Gill lives on Clare Island.
I have a house on the island for the last 40 years.
And you've had an experience recently with regard to your health.
I have, yeah. I was due a hip operation, a hip replacement. And I was here, and I was supposed to be in the hospital on the Monday, the 11th of February. And the weather was so bad, and nobody could tell you whether there would be a boat or not. So Alan advised me to go out on the Friday evening. So it meant that I had to leave the island 3 days before the operation or the hospital admission. And then being discharged from the hospital, I couldn't get in to the island because of bad weather, and for a week I was on the mainland waiting to get the right opportunity. I did not want to go in from Achill because that's very difficult to get on the boat when if you have crutches, which I have at the moment. So I waited for a calm day to get in from Runa, and that meant staying on the mainland for another 7 days. I have relations and I have friends on the mainland that I can stay with, but for those who don't have it, it's a very expensive thing. I mean, it meant if I didn't have anybody to stay with, I would have had to have a hotel room for 10 days. What we need here on the island is a reliable harbour that can work the whole year round, which we don't have at the moment. And I think that over 50% of the trips this year have gone to Achill and not to Runa. It's our lifeline to the mainland, to the world, to be able to come in and out. And a lot of the other islands have proper piers on the mainland, but we don't. We don't have a safe harbour in the wintertime. That's what we need, absolutely.
My name is Ian McCabe. I moved here back home from America 5 years ago to raise my family, and I work from home for the university in Galway, and I volunteer on the local community development. I can do most of my work from home, which is great, so I do it from here in Clare Island, but a large part of my job requires me to be on the mainland, and it's been quite difficult the last couple of months, to say the least. 70 of our scheduled boats have been disrupted in the last 2 months over the course of 38 different days. It's impossible to make any plan, be it for work, for domestic stuff, you know, groceries, anything.
Do you leave a car on the mainland then?
Yeah, I have a car in Runa.
If your boat arrives at Clapmore and Achill, what do you do then?
Oh, I try not to go. I can't go. Clapmore is really, it's not really an option. You have to take a bus or a taxi around the entirety of Clubay, which takes you an hour and a half before you can even begin your journey. And the pier in Clapmore, it's not a passenger pier. It's not for people. It's for commercial fishing boats. So the elderly or infirm, if you have children, it can be very difficult to go to Clapmore.
It must be really disruptive then for you trying to live your life here and commute with Galway.
It makes my job very difficult. I've got three kids. It makes it difficult to keep groceries in the house. It makes it difficult to make appointments for even basic stuff, like if you wanted to attend the dentist. It's impossible to make plans this time of year, especially. You can see today we finally have a good day, the activity that's in the place, trying to prepare ourselves for the next round of bad weather, which is on the way. But the killer is, of these nearly 40 days this year so far that the boats have been disrupted, there's only been four of those days that weren't fit to sail at all. Every other day they've managed to put on an alternative, make arrangements to keep the vital lifeline going with the mainland. And other islands like Arranmore Island, their ferry can be going through the heart of these storms. We're saddled with Runa.
It's the infrastructure then at Runa that's the big problem.
Even when the weather is relatively mild, it's still a dangerous spot because you can have erratic waves come in there. It might be 10 or 12 feet tall when the boat is trying to dock or trying to bring passengers on and off. And I think there's an incredible risk of something disastrous happening there because it's so exposed and there's no breakwater. There's no shelter there for the boats. We're trying to land our boats there, get our kids on and off and our elderly people out to the hospital.
And are you lobbying for a new pier?
Very much so, yeah. We have a petition, an online petition that's got thousands of people have signed it so far. We have made multiple petitions to politicians and to our local council. So we need some help. Yeah, big time.
After 37 years of campaigning for improved infrastructure, the islanders are clear about their requirements.
A safe harbour on the mainland and a better harbour on Clare Island with a daily commuter ferry service to the mainland all year round. Let us be part of the mainland community, access to 21st century Ireland.
Joanna McNicholas on Clare Island. Recently, I was at the Irish Angling Expo in Swords in County Dublin. There were lots of boats for sale there. I had a look at a few and I got some advice on what was available if you are thinking of buying a small boat this summer. I first met Brian O'Sullivan of the well-known boat builders O'Sullivan Marine and Tralee. I asked him if he'd tell me something about the company.
Indeed I can. O'Sullivan Marine have been going since, too long to remember really, back in the mid-60s, 64. So now we're now 56 years in the marine business in Ireland. And we have third generation just coming through.
You're based in Tralee and you build your own boats, many of them.
We still build our own boats. It is something that we've been reducing over the years because of the cost of building in Ireland. But yes, we're still building lake boats, sea boats, river boats, sailing boats and power boats.
Let's start with this one here. It's a traditional fly fishing boat that you might use on a lake. You've built that yourself, made of fiberglass. Tell me about it.
Yeah, that's our top of the range fiberglass lake boat. It's called the Mayfly. We've been building these since mid-90s. It's traditional in appearance only, but it has a lot of different features that are very, very different to what we would consider the normal lake boat. This one is all fiberglass, so therefore the beauty of this boat is there is no maintenance required.
Yeah, it's on a trailer, easily towable. Is it lighter than a wooden boat?
It should be, but it isn't, because we build it very, very strongly and we build it to a certain standard, and it has been the same standard for nearly 25 years, so we're not going to change. We believe in building robust but good quality certified boats.
So something like that, with the engine, with stepping back, I think about 7,500?
Yes, that one you can go for a basic 6 horsepower or maximum horsepower on that particular boat is a 15 horsepower. So 7,500, 8,000 would cover the price.
In the here, then, you have something in front of us, a wally boat, a plastic boat. Doesn't look half as nice as the traditional boat, but they're becoming increasingly popular.
We can't get over how popular these boats are. We've been dealing with these. They're built in Holland, but we've been dealing with them for about 3-4 years now, and the demand is very, very strong for the simple reason that they're very robust and forgiving. If you make a mistake, it doesn't cost you a lot in repairs.
Yeah, you could hit a rock, you just bounce off it.
Literally, yeah.
The other end of the scale over here, you've got an aluminium boat.
Yeah, we've been dealing with Linder aluminium boats. They're one of the highest quality aluminium boat of the range, of that size range. We've been dealing with them since 1996, and they go from 3.5 metres up to 5.3 metres. And the bigger one is obviously quite expensive because it's very high quality, and then you go down to 4 metres, 3.5 metres, and they're for 2,500-3,000 euros.
How popular are they? There's no maintenance.
There's less maintenance in those than there is in a fiberless boat, but the real beauty of the aluminium boat is they're lightweight, so they're very easy to handle, and you don't need a big trailer, you don't need a big car to tow.
Is it stable, given that it's so light?
To be perfectly honest with you, there are about 10 boats in the range. Two of them I'm not very fond of because they're not as stable as I'd like them to be. But the other 8 of the 10 are very stable, and light weight doesn't really make much of a difference. In that point of view, it's the whole design shape.
Now here, just next to us, we have kayaks, fishing kayaks at the other end of the scale.
Yeah, we have a fantastic range of both recreational and angling kayaks, ranging from about 3 metres up to 4.5 metres, and a number of people from singles to 2 adults and 1 child even. So prices are very, very competitive, and the range is very extensive.
Now, down here at the bottom, you have a tarpon propel 10-foot. You cycle this thing.
You do. You can paddle it in the normal way, but you can also pedal it with your feet. So you get a good workout and you can cover a lot more ground a lot quicker. So it's the way things are going in the kayak business. People are going further distances, staying out for longer, and when they want to get home, then the extra bit of leg power is great to get you home a bit faster.
Kayak fishing is becoming increasingly popular.
Yeah, this is our first year coming to the angling show with kayaks, and we just can't get over the response. It's been fantastic. The quality of these ones are very good. They come with a lot of optional extras, like good quality seats, paddles, buoyancy aids, obviously the foot pedals on some kayaks. So the range is very, very good. And you get them starting from 300 euros up to 1,300 euros.
I've spent much of my life on much bigger boats than these. Are they safe?
These are seat-ons. You sit on top of them rather than sit in them. So if you fall out, you just quite easy to get back in again and right them. Whereas the sit-ins, it's a bit trickier, we put it that way, and you're better off practicing those, because if you do capsize, they're very difficult to get them back up there upright again, whereas the sit-ons are very, very easy.
You've also got small ribs here.
Yeah, we have a fantastic range of small ribs and inflatables, starting at 2.4 metres up to 6 metres in the ribs, but the best sellers are kind of 2.6, 2.8, 3 metres, and we have a good range between air floors, plyo floors and aluminium floors. Very, very, very competitive prices.
2.3 metre rib is quite small. What would I use it for?
Yeah, generally speaking, as a tender, but when you go up to the 2.3, 2.4, 2.6, or probably for tenders to go to bigger boats, but when you go up from there up, people use them for fishing, people use them for just messing around in, or getting the kids used to being underwater. So a variety of uses.
And somebody else I met at the Angling Expo was Michael Sheehan of Waterford City and County Trout Anglers. Their angling facilities are at Carrigavantry Reservoir near Tramore in County Waterford. They have a fly fishing competition there tomorrow, Saturday, March 7th, in aid of the Down Syndrome Association. It includes dinner afterwards. For entries and information, check out their Facebook page, Waterford Fly Fishing. Walking the streets of Dublin, you wouldn't know that over 100 rivers run underground in the city. But our regular contributor, Hugh Oram, has the story of some of them.
Dublin, both the city and the county, between them have something like 130 rivers and streams. Many of them have long since been culverted, so they're no longer visible to the public. There are only a few rivers, such as the Liffey, the Dodder and the Talca, that still flow overground so that they can be clearly seen. At one stage, up to a couple of centuries ago, Dublin had over 60 rivers that flowed entirely at ground level, making them clearly visible. Perhaps the best known of the underground rivers is the Poddle, which for centuries gave the city its drinking water, powered its many flour and textile mills, and even protected Dublin Castle, a structure that dates back 8 centuries. The Poddle rises in Talla, near the Dublin Mountains, and for a few kilometres it's an overground river known as the Timon. 2 kilometres from its source, it's joined by a branch of the River Dodder. Back in the mid-15th century, monks from the St. Thomas Court Abbey had dug a channel running for nearly 3 kilometres that carries water from the River Dodder near Firhouse to increase the flow of the River Poddle. At Kimmage, the river reappears overground as it traverses Poddle Park before flowing back into a culvert. And a little further on at Mount Argus, the river flows through yet another park. Mount Argus was long known as the site of the stone boat, which was shaped like the bow of a ship, designed to divide the river into 2 sections. One of those sections flowed into the city basin beside the Guinness storehouse and close to the Guinness brewery, but that city basin can no longer be seen as it was filled in well over a century ago. Past Mount Argus, the Poddle can be seen once more in various other locations close to Mount Jerome Cemetery. Then as it flows through the Blackpits area, the Poddle is joined by numerous other underground streams, such as Tenter's Water. And near the junction with Patrick Street and Kevin Street, the underground river splits in two, although both streams remain close to one another. St. Patrick's Cathedral was built on an island between the two streams, which gave rise to the ancient medieval description of St. Patrick's on the island. Subsequently, the two streams reunite before they flow close to Dublin Castle. They formed a moat around the castle, and the waters were dammed to keep water levels high, and from that comes the name of Dame Street. Finally, the river flows under Wellington Quay before going into the River Liffey close to the Millennium Bridge. And along its winding and often divided course, the Poddle provided water for drinking, as well as for industries such as brewing and distilling. Another crucial underground river in the city centre is the Steyne. When the Ivy Garden Hotel was opened in Harcourt Street 2 years ago, the fact that the underground Steyne River flows 50 metres below the hotel was well commemorated. And then also, close to Houston Station, the Camac, another underground watercourse, flows into the Liffey. Also, right in the city centre is the Bradogue River, which empties into the Liffey near the Four Courts. Then on the south side of the city, the Swan River flows underground, beneath Terenure, Rathmines and Ballsbridge, flowing beneath the main Moorhampton Road and eventually emptying into the River Dodder near the Aviva Stadium. And on the north side of the city, the River Nanican flows underground before eventually discharging into the sea close to North Bull Island. The whole area of both Dublin city and county has a vast number of underground rivers and streams. Their trajectories have shaped the entire pattern of the area, yet since they are all underground, they have had a vast influence on the way in which Dublin has developed, but have remained entirely hidden from public view.
Hugh Oram.